Once again, I'm joined by NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne and NPR Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman. Don, I'm going to go to you first. Your impressions of the speech?
There is a certain kind of speech this president gives when he wants to sit people down and explain something in detail. And he did that with this speech. It was very serious of purpose. Obviously, we knew it would be that. But you could hear him throughout the speech talking to different constituencies. He spoke to the generals, acknowledged their request, and he is essentially meeting most of what they had asked for. He spoke to the troops, the cadets mm-hmm. in the room. Mm-hmm. He talked of their courage, recognizing
what he owed them,
a mission that would be worthy of their courage. And he spoke to the American people to remind them why we went in, what has happened as the U.S. military switched its focus to Iraq, and why this is a very risky, dangerous place if the status quo is allowed to be maintained. He also, in one passage and at some length, he linked our economic strength and our foreign policy strength, how one funds the other, one makes the other possible, but stressed again that we need to balance these national programs. We cannot think about the war without thinking about it in the context of our economy. And he said, again, in that reassuring category, the only nation he is interested in building is our own.
And he anticipated the criticism that he might hear and took on some of his critics as well.
Directly. And that's actually a somewhat unusual thing. He brought up Vietnam, how some people see this as another.
And the administration has not wanted to really make that comparison at all.
Exactly. And he said there is no broad-based insurgency here as there was in Vietnam. Recall, we were attacked by people operating out of Afghanistan. And they still want to attack. He also said keeping the same troop levels, which many have suggested, would just mean we'd muddle along the way we are with no real progress.
Tom Bowman covers the Pentagon for us, national security. You spent quite a bit of time in Afghanistan. Your thoughts on what you heard tonight?
Well, what struck me is how vague a lot of this was. He talks about we'll begin handing over responsibility to Afghan forces in July 2011 and start bringing U.S. forces home. Doesn't say how much territory will be handed over to Afghan forces. It could be a little bit. It could be a district. Could be one province. He also doesn't say how many U.S. forces would start coming home. These additional 30,000, will they all come home at that point? You could bring home a brigade, 4,000 or 5,000 soldiers, and say, we're starting to bring our forces home. That's very important, I think, how vague it is. Now, he also says, this is his wiggle room here, he says all of this depends on conditions on the ground, a term we heard in Iraq, which delayed U.S. forces leaving Iraq for a number of years. So I think the vagueness of this speech is what really jumped out at me. Here's another thing that jumped out. He says, we will continue to advise and assist Afghan forces to ensure they succeed, quote, over the long haul. That sounds to me like quite a number of years.
You also did not necessarily hear the pressure points that they might use to make sure that Hamid Karzai was able to stay on mission, because they said that they're not going to turn over control unless they like what they see on the ground, but they didn't say exactly what kind of muscle they would use to make sure that that happened.
Exactly. He didn't put a lot of pressure on Karzai. He's basically saying he promised to do those sorts of things in his address when he was reelected. He hopes that they'll move in the right direction. They're encouraging that. They'll encourage certain ministries. They hope people who are accused of corruption or found to be corrupt to be dealt with. The problem is some of those serious allegations of corruption involve President Karzai's own family. So we'll see if they actually hold those people accountable.
Tom Bowman covers the Pentagon for us, and we also heard from Don Gagne, who's NPR's White House correspondent. Thanks to you both.
Pleasure.
You're welcome.
We now go to Congressman McKeon, Howard Buck McKeon of California. He's the ranking Republican on the House Armed Services Committee. We're going to hear his thoughts on the president's address tonight. Congressman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Michelle.
What did you think of what you heard tonight?
Well, I felt good about the fact that the president finally made a decision. You know, it's been 3 months that we've been working on this thing. I know Republicans want to be supportive. We want to support the troops. We want to support the mission. There were some things that I have some real concerns about.
Such as?
Well, 30,000 troops, I think, we'll find was less than what General McChrystal asked for. Hopefully, with some more troops from NATO, we might be able to get close to what he requested as a risky venture. But 30,000 is better than nothing. And then the thing that I was really most concerned about, though, is the president, in the same breath, in the same paragraph, putting a time limit. He said, well, I'm going to put 30,000 troops in, and then in a year and a half, we'll start withdrawing them. And I think that sends a wrong message. It undercuts what we're trying to do with the whole mission.
You mean it signals our moves to the enemy?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're talking a year and a half out. Some of these troops that he's requesting now probably won't even get into theater for 6 months. And that means they're there for a year, and then we start pulling out. That leaves very limited time in trying to do anything to build up the Iraqis where the Afghans, where they'll be able to stand on their own. They have right now less than 200,000 in the Afghan National Security Forces. And when I was in Afghanistan a few months ago, our commanders would rate their army right now at about a C and their police at less than that. And so I know General McChrystal asked for a force of 400,000. And to try to build that force and then to give them the training and the wherewithal they need in that very short period of time, I think is putting the whole mission in jeopardy.
And just to clarify, McChrystal asked for a force of 400,000. That would be about 240,000 members of the Afghan army and then another 160,000 police officers. That's what you're talking about there.
That was his request, yes.
And the timeline, please finish.
You know, setting the timeline of withdrawal should not be an arbitrary number. That should be something that is set based on conditions on the ground. And, he sounded pretty definite on the withdrawal and not so definite on what the conditions would be.
Well, before I let you go, sir, I'm curious about what kind of support you think the president might see or from congressional Republicans.
Well, I think there are a lot of questions that we need answered. We're looking forward to the hearings in the next few days and week, where we can hear from Secretary Gates and from Admiral Mullen and from General McChrystal, and we're also trying to get General Petraeus. I think there are some questions we'd like to ask of them, and then we'll have a better feel as to where we are.
That's Congressman Howard Buck McKeon of California, sir. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Congressman McKeon is the ranking Republican on the House Armed Services Committee. Another political voice now, this time a Democrat. We're joined by Senator Bernie Sanders. He's an independent from the state of Vermont. Mr. Sanders, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Michelle.
Senator, what did you make of the president's speech tonight?
Well, look, I think everybody agrees that it would be a real setback for democracy and stability in the region if the Taliban regained control there. We want to prevent that. But I have a number of concerns regarding what the president said. First, given the importance of Pakistan, a nuclear country, and the need for stability in the region, I have a very simple question. Where is the rest of the world? If we add another 30,000 troops to what we already have, we are going to be 70% of the foreign troops in Afghanistan. I know the president has talked about other countries, but that's the reality. 70% of all of the troops will be American troops, and American taxpayers are going to bear the overwhelming financial burden for this war. So like Iraq, this once again becomes to the rest of the world an American war. Where is Europe? Why aren't they concerned in jumping into this fray as well? Where is Russia? Where is China? The issue of instability in that area should impact every major country in the world, and I'm wondering why they are not participating with us. Second issue, and the president really didn't touch on this at all or very much, we are in the midst of the worst economic recession since the Great Depression. You got 17% of our people are unemployed or underemployed. One out of four kids in this country is now on food stamps. Cities, states all over this country are cutting back on basic services – financial resources. If you add 30,000 more troops, the guess is that we'll be spending about $100 billion a year on the war in Afghanistan, and add to that substantial sums of money for Iraq. Where's this money coming from?
Well, let me ask you that, Senator. Some Democrats in the House have proposed a war tax to pay for operations. Would you support some sort of war surtax?
Well, it's a good debate. I mean, what Bush did, which I think was immoral and wrong, is he simply let the war in Iraq be paid for by our kids and our grandchildren. That's wrong. On the other hand, if you have a surtax, and Dave Obey is talking about a progressive surtax, which is clearly the way you go if you decided to have a tax, well, you know what? We're also trying to get money from the top 1% for health care. We need to rebuild our infrastructure. We need to move to sustainable energy. We need resources there, too. So while I do agree that this war should be paid for, I am deeply concerned that the money is going to come out of very basic needs for the American people as we try to create jobs, combat global warming, make sure families could send their kids to college. And the president really did not sufficiently address that issue. And I think the last point, which is on the minds of everybody, to engage in a war like the one in Afghanistan, you need partnership. You need the partnership of the Afghan people and their government. It is no secret that the Afghan government is corrupt. It is no secret that they do not have the respect of their own people. And I just don't know how you develop a partnership when the other side really does not have credibility with its own people. So those are just a few of the concerns that I have.
Well, thank you for sharing them with us, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Bernie Sanders is an independent from Vermont. Thanks so much, sir.
Bye-bye.
The president spent a good deal of time talking tonight about the training of Afghan police and military forces. Bing West is a retired Marine and a former Assistant Secretary of Defense under President Reagan, and he joins us now. Mr. West, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
There's been a lot of back and forth about how realistic the president's goals are when it comes to training both the Afghan army and the police forces. Do you think he struck the right balance tonight?
I think he did. I think that sending in more American troops is a sign that he's serious. And at the same time, he's saying, but we're not going to do it for you. And people get that. And this basically responds to General McChrystal saying, I have to seize the initiative. So I'm rather confident that over the next year, we will seize the initiative.
What are the lessons from training forces in Iraq that do or that do not apply in Afghanistan?
Well, the basic lesson is that we're going to be pulling out some of our combat troops, because the president has promised it, within 18 months. But we're not talking about trainers. We're talking about advisors who go into combat. And the lesson from Iraq is that the advisors are going to have to stay there much longer. I mean, much longer. But that doesn't mean that you're there in very large numbers. But you're going to still have Americans in combat in Afghanistan until the Taliban is defeated.
Is 18 months enough time to get this this force of 400,000 that General McChrystal has called for?
Oh, absolutely not. No. But that's not the point. The point isn't the numbers. The question really in any war is the moral to the physical. The question is, when do the Afghan forces believe they can be tougher than the Taliban? And giving them 18 more months to stand up to the Taliban, I think, will make a difference.
Help me understand something. The White House acknowledged today that the real challenge, or the more difficult challenge, is building and training a credible and non-corrupt police force, that they've had much more success in trying to build the army. Why does the police force present such a problem, so many more challenges in the Afghan army?
Well, the problem with the police is they've been neglected and they have no salaries and they shake people down. I'm not persuaded that how this is going to shake out is that the police are going to become the linchpin. Really, what happened in Iraq was that the American battalions partnered with Iraqi battalions, and gradually it was the Iraqi army that put pressure on their own police. And I think that's a better model. If we look at Afghanistan and don't look first at the police, but look first at building a competent Afghanistan army, then the Afghanistan army will be the ones who take care of their own police forces.
Bing West, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bing West is a retired Marine and a former Assistant Secretary of Defense under President Reagan. We've got just a few minutes left, but we're going to turn now to two of our regular political contributors. E.J. Dionne is a columnist for The Washington Post and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and Matt Continetti is an associate editor of The Weekly Standard. So glad you're both with me tonight.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
I'm going to start with you, E.J. What stood out for you tonight?
Well, I think President Obama was trying to argue that he's going straight down the middle and avoiding extreme choices, that he was offering a kind of Goldilocks plan, not too hot, not too cold, but just right. He was saying that we need more troops now to improve the situation so we can get out 18 months later. I was struck with the same passage that Don Gagne mentioned earlier, where he was trying to set up the arguments he was arguing against. You know, no, he was saying to some liberals, this is not Vietnam. We have real interests here. We were attacked from here. No, to a kind of muddled middle. We can't just go with the number of troops we have. But, and this was trying to be reassuring to liberals, I'm not going to engage in a great big nation building operation. I eventually want to get out. So he's trying to find a middle. Now, does a middle exist on this? Well, I was struck by your two interviews. Congressman McKeon, the Republican, said, well, I really don't like this withdrawal idea sometime down the road, the exit strategy. Bernie Sanders obviously doesn't like the whole policy. I think he will get some significant criticism from his own party, but I think he bought time tonight.
So you're talking about Goldilocks, not too hot, not too cold. I think of, you know, you can please some of the people some of the time, but you can't please all the people.
Right. There may be a very small middle on this one, but Obama is trying to stand there. Now, I think he bought himself some time. I think he's saying we can get this thing better in 18 months, and I honestly don't think there'll be the votes to block this policy anytime soon. So I think he can roll forward with this for a while.
Matthew?
The lesson from the Iraq surge was that if you fully resource the mission and you have the right strategy, results can come very quickly. And I think Obama is kind of counting on that when he gives out this date of 2011. Maybe we'll be able to bring some of the troops back home. But I think more important than any exit strategy, and the administration gave a background briefing over the phone this afternoon where I took the same lesson, was rather than emphasize the exits, which Obama was doing to placate his own base, really, the overwhelming lesson from this speech that I took was the commitment. And he is making a big commitment. This is a very major decision of his presidency. He's sending additional troops. He's accelerating the deployment, which is also important. He wants to get them right in field. It took longer in some cases in the Iraq surge to get the troops out there.
And there was a lesson learned there also.
And we didn't see the bulk of the fighting, remember, until 6 months in the summer of 2007 after Bush announced the strategy. And then, of course, he used that key phrase that I was looking for, which is population security. Now, he only used it once, but that's a key lesson from Iraq. No matter how many troops we had, as long as we were on these search and destroy missions in Iraq, we weren't getting anywhere. When we shifted to population security strategy, the results came quick. Looks like they're going to adopt the same thing in Afghanistan.
The one thing that if you were watching or listening from home that you might have seized on, where he said that al-Qaeda is like a cancer, and we need to eradicate it. And an average listener or viewer hearing that might think, well, you know, some cancers are curable and some are not. And it all depends on the course of treatment. Is he following the right course here?
Well, I think Dr. Obama would insist that this cancer is curable. Otherwise, he wouldn't be making this commitment. And I think, in a funny way, what I was thinking of when he was talking was that old Vietnam-era slogan, win or get out. And what he's really saying is, unless we substantially improve the situation, he's very careful about how he defines win, but he's basically saying we can't get out unless we improve the situation. And so I agree with Matt. He is making a very big commitment here.
You know, you both participated in background briefings at the White House today, so you got, you know, to really look at the inside thinking on this. And I participated in one of these also, and one of the big questions still is, do they have enough leverage? They're talking about withholding money in some cases from the central government, sending it to various ministries based on performance, try to cut down on corruption. But do you think that they have enough leverage to really make sure that Karzai is going to walk the walk?
I think if we return to the Iraq analogy once again, if you remember Maliki's government back there in the summer of late 2006 was perceived as weak, as corrupt. He had no control over the country. Once you had that American commitment, once you started to see results on the ground, which took their toll in lives and treasure, there's no doubt about it. Then the government, just as Bing West was alluding, the military, the other institutions, they began to step up to the plate in Iraq. And I think we might see something similar happen to it in Afghanistan. It's going to have to be the population security that comes first before you see any leverage from the Afghan government.
We're running out of time, but I just want to ask, was there enough focus on Pakistan, or does Pakistan at this point seem like an afterthought, and is there a danger in that?
Well, I think that Pakistan is at the heart of their strategy, and he talked about it a lot, but the troops have to go to Afghanistan. But in terms of leverage, I am struck, this is almost a states' rights strategy. They're basically saying, we're going to go around the central government if we have to. We're going to help particular ministries that work. We're going to help local leaders, again, like we did in the successful parts of the Iraq strategy. And I think that's the leverage they're going to exercise.
We only have just a few minutes left, but who do we need to hear from next to sell this? How do they roll this out? Because they're trying to reach a lot of different people, different audiences. It's a tough sales job.
Well, it is. And, of course, the key is the Democrats in Congress who are expressing such skepticism about the strategy. About 6 in 10 Democrats in the latest Gallup poll saying it's time to leave Afghanistan. Obama's taking on his party for the first time of his presidency.
Two kinds of Democrats are going to help him, the real hawks, a small minority, and the ones who say, gee, I hope he's right. And that second group is going to be key to him.
We've been hearing from E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Matt Continetti. He's an associate editor at The Weekly Standard. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to special live coverage of President Obama's address to the nation.